You're listening to Wheelationships.
We've been talking about remaking our crazy makers, those people in your life that they're important in some way. You're connected to them in some way by blood or by marriage or by job or by something. They're important to you. And they create craziness in your life. They know how and when to push your buttons, and they don't always know they're pushing your buttons. And that's probably some of what makes you crazy too, is like you tell them you're pushing my buttons and they go, what? But it happens. So we've been walking through 7 resources that we can implement in creating change or helping create change in the relationship and in the life of your crazy maker. And just real quick, we will review them real quick. Number one resource is God. We talked about others, your own life, your stance. This is where you take a stance of grace. You take a stance of love towards them, that we are for the relationship. I am for you. I am for us. But that doesn't mean I'll agree with you, and things need to change. And then last week, Trudy took us through your words. It can be uncomfortable to speak directly to an issue. That's why for some of us, it's much easier to be passive aggressive and kind of, as we're walking by, throw out a little dart, a little bomb, and hope that is effective. And it's, with a crazy maker, it's absolutely not going to be effective any more than it will be for most normal people. But so it can be hard. It can be difficult to request the needed change because of the pushback we often get from a crazy maker. Denial, deflection, blame going somewhere else. Sometimes they'll try to turn it around and make you think that, you know, you're the problem. And that's, again, some of what makes us crazy is like, no. But assuming you've made it this far with your crazy maker, assuming that you're going through with these resources, seeking God, seeking safe and sane relationships, taking the proper stance, using words that are effective, you've requested change, you've addressed their legitimate needs in talking. Trudy talked about this. As you speak your words, you wait and listen for their legitimate needs, because there probably are some that you need to address, but they're still making crazy. And so as Trudy got us to the end last week, she said, we eventually get to this point where we have to make a warning of, okay, this needs to stop, and I'm going to give you fair warning that things are going to change if you don't change what you're doing here. So you warned them, it's time to bring this next resource into play, which is your actions. Your actions. Sometimes words are going to be enough to affect change in your button pusher. As Trudy talked about, it's not that we haven't used words before. We've used them. Sometimes we just haven't used the right words in the right way at the right time. But sometimes words aren't enough. Some button pushers are used to words. In fact, some button pushers are used to a lot of words. And to them, it's just Charlie Brown's teacher. Exactly. Trudy's back there going, wah, 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 wah. So they ignore it. But actions, the correct actions, done in the correct way, with the correct intent, can be tremendously powerful. I'm doing a little something different this morning, in that I'm going to read you a story, a true example of a crazy maker and how her son had to deal with her by going beyond words to action. And he used action that was positive and made a difference. This story is a little long, so hang with me. Usually when we read an example, it's kind of short, but I thought this was good. So this is about Tom and his mom. This is a story about Tom and his mother, Andrea. Without going into the details, she had been a pretty poor mom during his childhood. Andrea had had a lot of dependency, immaturity, and divisiveness that had caused him a lot of trouble growing up. However, Tom had gotten good help, support, and counseling during his adult life, and he really had dealt with his baggage from her. He forgave her and went on with his life. Andrea was still the sort of person she had always been and would blame him for things out of the blue sometimes, but he chalked it up to her issues and he didn't take it too seriously. He had a good balance about his mom. He didn't expect a lot from her, and though he was friendly with her, he didn't spend a lot of time with her either. From time to time, he, his wife Chris, and their son Matt would visit her or have her over to their home. So far, so good. Okay, she was one of those people you'd want a closer relationship with, but it just wasn't happening. So sometimes that's where you have to be with relationships. The problem at hand, however, did not now revolve around Andrea and Tom, but around Andrea and Matt. Now, if you didn't follow through, Matt is Tom's son, Andrea's grandson. Andrea wasn't a wonderful grandmother either, but she had been okay until now. In the last few weeks, however, when she was angry at Tom for some real or imagined slight, she had changed tactics in a very destructive manner. She had begun to call Matt, who was now 13, when she could get him on the phone away from his parents. She would tell him negative and untrue things about Tom in order to get back at her son. It was a vengeful and sick thing to do. She was clearly a very disturbed button pusher. Understandably, this upset the boy a great deal. He told his dad and mom about it, and he was torn up inside to have his own grandmother trying to turn him against his dad. It was a traumatic experience for Matt. Tom acted quickly. He called Andrea and told her that she was not going to call Matt directly again, but to go through him from now on. He warned her that she was jeopardizing her relationship with them, if she did not stop. So he's used words, now he's used warning. But it did not end there. A few days later, Andrea again called Matt when Tom and Chris weren't around and criticized him for telling on her to Tom. Tom became very upset and angry at how destructive Andrea was being to her own grandson. He recognized the repetition of how she had been in his childhood. Again, he called her and told her to stop, and again she ignored him and called Matt behind their backs. Tom had instructed Matt to not answer the phone anymore, but with the teenager. That was a little unreasonable and enforceable. This was a few years ago when it wasn't a cell phone. It was actually a house phone. Tom knew that it was time to go beyond words to actions with Andrea. That day, he called her and said, "Mom, I wanted you to know that I think at this stage you are toxic with our family. You've hurt us and continue to hurt us, and you've not listened to my request to change. So from now on, we'll not have any contact with you until you apologize and ask forgiveness for what you have done to me, to Chris, and to Matt individually." Andrea yelled, cried, and accused him of being mean and judgmental. She refused to even consider what he had asked and hung up on him. If that weren't hard enough, she began calling them up, but not to apologize. She would start blaming and playing the victim. She called Tom's sister and brother and convinced them that Tom was being cruel to her. But crazy maker, right? But Tom, Chris, and Matt did not move from their stance. When she called, they would say, "If this isn't about apologizing, I'm going to hang up now." She would scream or cry, and they would hang up. This happened several times, and then Andrea wrote them a letter saying that she herself was cutting off all contact with them because they were being so mean. Tom went through a lot of mental and emotional turmoil during this time. He often doubted himself. His conscience attacked him about how unforgiving he was being, which is not true. Forgiveness is about yesterday, which Tom had dealt with. He was protecting tomorrow. Even a few of his friends thought he was being too harsh. Matt missed his grandmother, though he knew she was very difficult, but Tom stuck to his convictions and his limits. 2 years passed. 2 years. Then Tom got a call from Andrea. When he picked up the phone, she said, "I'm sorry for what I did. Will you forgive me?" And she was serious. He was blown away. His mom, who was virtually dead to him, had come alive again. He said, "Of course," and she then talked to Chris and Matt and reconciled with them too. Very happy, but also cautious and curious, Tom asked Andrea what had happened. She told him that basically it had taken that long a time and the help of some friends to realize she was wrong and how much she missed them. That was what it took to humble herself enough to ask forgiveness for her hurtfulness. Tom understood and in time began reestablishing visits and phone calls with Andrea. To the date of this writing, it had been several months now, and things have remained good enough to continue. As Tom says, Andrea is still Andrea, but she doesn't do anything really serious anymore, so it's okay. Okay. Notice it didn't become like happy fairy tale ending where everybody just gets really, really close. She just stopped the crazy making and returned to the normal, okay. But the reason it was now okay, because Tom walked through some of what we're going to talk about here. He had moved from words to actions, and he did it the right way. As I said before, crazy makers are used to words. They're used to us saying, you got to stop. You need to change. This needs to stop. You're hurting me. This is not right. They're used to nagging. They're used to cajoling. They're used to threatening. They're used to, you know, whatever. And most of the time, people don't put actions behind their words. And unfortunately, a lot of times we don't put the correct actions behind our words. We usually get to the point of frustration where we put actions like slamming a door or yelling or other kind of stuff, or we shut down and we pout and we withdraw and we won't talk and stick out the pouty lip, and you know, we put all those kind of actions, and that just reinforces with our crazy maker that we're being crazy. And doesn't really follow up on this. So instead of blowing up, walking away, shutting down, there's a cohesive strategy involved. Or we might have taken an action of revenge to try to even up the score. You know, you've been hurting me. I'm going to make this more fair because I've been doing all the work and you're that way. And I'm going to even the score. And so we take that. I don't think this is in your notes. Using action has nothing to do with revenge or anger. That's the first thing I wanted you to get. Using action. When we talk about using your actions, this has nothing to do with getting back and evening the score, making it fair. You drove me crazy, so we're going to drive you a little crazy too. Or in anger of, you know, I just want to punch you in the face. You're making me so crazy here. You want me to push your button? I'm going to push it hard. Proper action, in fact, is going to reduce your anger. If you take the correct action, the purpose of action is implementing our resources, and specifically implementing grace. You are for the person. You are for his or her growth. You are for the relationship. And so that's what we're about. That's what we're trying to do. So taking action is part of what Trudy defined last week in using our words. Because the process of taking action begins with the limit. Okay. She talked briefly about limits last week. A limit is when you draw a line which defines things. A limit is a line which defines things. We also call it a boundary. This is what is mine, and this is what is not mine. This is what is me, and this is what is not me. So among the things that our limits can define, because it says it defines things, okay, among the things that it can define are who you are and who you are not. Simply, I am me, I am not you. So that's kind of a basic thing. Limits can define what is your responsibility and what is not your responsibility. God sets limits for us about our responsibilities. 1 Thessalonians, then each one of you will control his own body and live in holiness and honor. So he defines a limit there for us. This is what you should do. I care about you, but I will not be controlled by your emotions because they are your emotions. They are not my controller. A limit can define what you will tolerate and what you will not. I will put up with some irresponsibility. I will even tolerate behavior which may even cause me pain, but I won't allow you to harm me. I won't allow you to harm our relationship. That's the limit. when you set a limit with a crazy maker, you're drawing a line for both of you. It's not just your crazy maker you're drawing the limit for. You're drawing it for yourself as well. It informs you which behavior you'll accept and which behavior you won't. In our story of Tom and his mother, his limit was that she was not to call the grandson directly. That's the limit. You do not do that. Tom was defining that his family's welfare belonged to him. It did not belong to Andrea, and he was going to take responsibility for that. He was defining that he was responsible to protect his wife and his son. He was not responsible for his mother's happiness, if that happiness included harming his family. So you have the limit, and then you have a warning. A warning serves notice to the person who ignores the boundary request. You've said, I have this boundary request, I have this limit. Now, I'm going to warn you, okay? Again, this is all review from what Trudy talked about last week. If the warning is ignored then, and the limits are ignored, what follows is the consequence. And the consequence is a result of a boundary violation. Consequences back up and enforce boundaries. A consequence is either the presence of something undesirable or the absence of something desirable. Consequence either says, this is going to be what results, and you're not going to like it, or this is what's going to result, and it's going to be taken away, something that you really want. In Andrea's case, she wanted the closeness and contact with her family. It's going to be taken away. She wanted to call whenever she wanted to. Nope, you're not going to get to do that. Okay, so you get that? You see how that consequence works? Okay, for that story, it was a loss of contact was the consequence. Over time, as this consequence is carried out in that story, it was recognized by Andrea that, there's something connected to my behavior. It's a consequence. And she began to recognize that, maybe I have some responsibility here. As we mentioned a couple of weeks ago, put the weight and responsibility where it belongs. That's what we're trying to do. We're putting on the shoulders of the one who should bear it. It's bringing reality into the situation. This process of limit, warning, consequence. Limit, warning, consequence is pretty straightforward. It's something I hope you grasp, and it's pretty easy to see. Something every parent should practice with your children, okay? If you have children or you have grandchildren that you spend time with, this is a principle that you need to pay attention to. And again, we've talked about principles. Principles just are. If you choose to ignore them, you do so to your detriment. If you choose to follow them, you do so to your everlasting blessing. And you've all seen parents that refuse, don't want to do this. They want to set limits. They want to set warnings. They want to set limits. They want to set warnings. Let's get some consequences in here, please. Okay, I'm going to tell you one more time. I'm going to tell you one more time. I'm going to tell you one more time. I'm going to tell you one more. Oh, please. Yes, ma'am.
Were there inconsistent consequences?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a big part of it. If you fail in this, then you're sabotaging your relationship, especially with children. Okay. The other day... the other day, Sawyer was looking for something to watch on TV, and she ended up on a rerun of Super Nanny. Anybody familiar with that show? Ever seen that show? Okay. It was funny because she thought from the title it was a show about different nannies and how great they were. She thought, oh, this is going to show something about this nanny and how great they are. And then it's going to move to another nanny. And it's, no, it's the same nanny. She just has dysfunctional families that she goes to. And basically, it's a whole process of learning limit, warning, consequence. And in pretty much every episode, it's parents who refuse to go through limit, warning, consequence. They go through limit or warning or consequences which are not effective, you know. We could go on. Anyway, and usually it's what happens in that show is the parents bring the nanny in thinking that you're here to fix the kid's behavior. And what she ends up doing is fixing the parents' behavior because they're not helping their kids whatsoever to know what they should do. The kids are running the place, and the parents, without limit, warning, consequence, okay, okay. Oh, they're driving me crazy. Well, okay, we need to get to some actions here. So what's the goal of a consequence? What's the goal? Is it a clean room? Okay, if you're dealing with children, I just want you to clean up your room, okay? Is it that you have peace and they quit bugging you, okay? Getting your way? No. There's an intermediate goal and a long-term goal. The intermediate goal is comprehension of reality. What you're first trying to bring in to your crazy maker is reality, because they are not seeing the way things really are. You want your little or big crazy maker to take the emotion of loss, the emotion of disappointment. There's a consequence, there's a feeling of loss, there's a feeling of disappointment. Recognize that there's a connection between the boundary violation and the consequence. There's a connection between a failing to adhere to the limit and what happened. There's reality involved. That's, you know, so your little crazy maker goes, ah, dad means what he says. Yes. Mom just isn't blowing smoke and counting to 3 or 5 or 10. There's actually something that's happening that's a result of what started, okay? First step. This is where we start with very young children and pets. Okay? It's understandable for very young children to only respond when there's a threat of consequence. Okay? So it's an intermediate goal. You got to begin here, okay? Pets understand that, you know, when you're there with the newspaper, you're not there to read it, but it's because they did a little duty on the carpet and, you know, whatever. So consequence. It's not okay to stay here. It's not okay to always be at this level where you just react as a response to the threat of a consequence, because you want it when you leave the room that they still understand reality. Okay, so the ultimate goal of consequence is maturity. Maturity. Mature people move beyond consequence and the threat of punishment or the fear that they're going to lose something they want, and they respond when they are asked to do so. They respond when they see a limit, they respond to it and say, no, I shouldn't do that. Because either they care about the other person or simply because it's the right thing to do. Okay. So I don't go rob a bank, not because I'm afraid of getting caught and thrown in jail. I don't rob a bank because that wouldn't be the right thing to do. That would be wrong. That's a mature outlook on things. So when the process of limit, warning, consequence is comprehended, and then it's a psychological word, but it's a good word, internalized. Okay. When you take that knowledge and you take that comprehension of this is reality, consequence happens, and then I internalize it and I take it inside and go, yeah, that's the way life works. And I should adhere to the limits. I should adhere to the warnings. I shouldn't go 100 miles an hour down Bayshore because it's just not smart. It's not the right thing to do, okay? We hope that this develops into a value that they choose. That's what you're supposed to do with kids, is you grow them up, you help them with values so that they mature and they own the values. And so when you send them off, that they're still going, that's the right thing to do. I'm mature now and I can handle that. So having said all that, you follow? You with me? Okay, now as you can see from your notes, it's short. We're going to carry this on in next week, because I'm going to start something here in a second, but I'm not going to give you very much because there's a lot to say on this. But the question at this point is, what should the consequence be? If consequences are important, and they are, if they are what brings reality to the situation, then it's important that you have the right consequence. Not that the consequence is that you're flying off the handle and acting like a nut, but that you have a consequence which promotes maturity. I understand the limits. I get the warnings. But what consequence is going to give me the best chance of affecting change in my crazy making button pusher? That's the right question. What should the consequence be? The question is not, what consequence will give me peace? Or what consequence will hurt them similar to how they're hurting me? The best consequences are good and they're deliberate fit for the situation and the person. The best consequences are for the good of your crazy maker and the good of your relationship. So there's no right consequences. You find this out if you have more than one child at home, that they don't all respond to the same consequence. Okay. For one of our children, just is enough to like, oh, okay, I get it, I'm done. Okay. For the other, it was a completely different set of things, okay? Like a little spanking would get one of them to realize reality. For another, no, it was going, you have to go and separate yourself. You're going to have to go sit by yourself. And that was traumatic, to be separated from other people. For the other one, separating would have been, whoo, yay, new, cool, great. I don't want to be around you people anyway. All right. So you got to find the right consequence for the right person and the right situation. There's no one size fits all. There is no right consequence. But there are principles for effective consequences. Principles for if they're here. So I'm going to give you some principles on the type of consequences that work best and the way to implement them that will prove most effective. So the first principle, and we'll just talk about this one today, is that we should connect consequences. And we've kind of already talked about this. We should connect consequences with reality. We should connect consequences with reality. The more that consequences reflect and draw from reality, the more effective they are. For instance, at work, imagine a person who is irresponsible. They miss assignments. They miss deadlines. Every time a deadline or an assignment is missed, they get called into the boss's office and they're reprimanded and they're told in the strongest possible way the harm they're doing to the organization and the other workers. And then every time they return from the boss's office, they have to go past their coworkers and they get accusatory looks and the cold shoulder from their coworkers because they failed. And that's what happens. Okay. Normal? Natural? We think it is. Now, imagine identical situation and identical irresponsible person. And in this case, the person doesn't get called into the boss's office. Okay, they've already been warned. They know what the limits and the warnings are. But they don't get called into the boss's office. They simply get low marks on their evaluation. They are passed over for promotion. They may be demoted. They may even lose their job. That's a more natural consequence. It's not just the boss is having a bad day. It's not just the boss flies off the handle when something goes wrong. It's not just, oh, those, my coworkers, they're so mean and you know, unfair, and they're always giving me snide comments, and it's their attitudes. That's why I'm doing such a bad job. That's because they're my coworkers, and my boss, he's so mean. And okay. They're both consequences. But in the first case, the one we think is more natural, the one we think that's reality, you know, boss gets mad at you when you mess up, okay? It's not as natural as we think. It doesn't connect the limit and the warning to what happens, okay? When your boss flies off the handle, take it to the home, take it to the personal relationship, you know, we think, well, I'm giving them a consequence when I give them a piece of my mind, okay? No, you're just, that's not a natural connection. You're crazy and irritable and aggravated, you know, maybe, it may not be me, you know, just might be, you know, that time. So whatever. Okay. No. Got it? Or suppose your crazy maker has a pattern of attempting to control you by acting hurt and wounded whenever you don't do what she wants. She withdraws, she pouts, she waits for you to come and ask what's wrong. And eventually when you do say, oh, what's wrong, honey? You get scolded because you didn't come sooner.
Well, if you really wanted to know, you would have asked me.
Well, I am asking you, dear. Okay. So instead of rescuing her from her withdrawal, a natural consequence would be to leave her alone until she initiates the conversation. And it won't be a conversation about why you didn't notice her hurt. It will be a conversation about why she felt hurt in the first place. So until she takes responsibility for her sadness and her emotion, which is most of the time just disguised anger, she is choosing to remove herself from the relationship. The separation is a natural consequence of the fact that she wants to go off and pout. Okay? These type of consequences point to the cause of the consequence. And what's the cause of the consequence? Real question. The crazy maker. That's why the consequence happens. Their actions, what they have done, is inviting a natural, real consequence. It helps the crazy maker see that cause and effect. And it's more likely that the crazy maker will see the connection and feel the frustration. And in time, if they feel that again and again, they may start to connect that the frustration is really with their own behavior. And maybe if I change my behavior, the consequences will change. Bah, light bulb. All right. So, or let's say your crazy maker is someone who is always late and expects everyone to wait and adjust because, well, that's just the way I am. You know how it is. I can never be on time for anything. Okay. And you've told them, okay, really, really. You're pushing my button every time. And you, oh, well, you know, you wait for me, right? Okay, fine. All right. Okay. One possible natural consequence is for everyone else in the crazy maker's life to agree that life is not suspended until she arrives. We're going to start on time. We're going to do what we're going to do. If she's not here, she's going to miss it. And when she blows up and says, you didn't wait for me? No. This is the time we start. You don't care? I care. I care about you. I care about our relationship. But this is a consequence of you not being on time. Natural consequence. In all of these consequences, whether or not your crazy maker changes, you're being consistent with your definition of life, your definition of limits, your definition of consequences. As Trudy said, consistency is a big deal. And in order to remain consistent, those consequences have to stay there. You are in control of your life, You're in control of your time. You're in control of your schedule. Your crazy maker is not. Okay. You want to be late. That's your schedule. It's not mine. Natural consequences remove you from the parent position with your crazy maker. You're not being mean. You're not being unloving. You're not being unkind or controlling. You're not the object of blame. It's the crazy maker's actions that are making this happen. It's the crazy maker's attitudes that are naturally inviting the consequence. The added benefit is once your crazy maker begins to see this and sees the cause of the pain, then even while they're experiencing that pain and those consequences, as they start to begin to see this, you can come in with some comfort and say, you know, I am sorry this is happening to you, and I feel really bad, and I'm here for you, even as the consequences continue, even as they keep going. This is one of the lessons, and I have in your notes a little clip from the parable of the lost son. We all know the story. I'm not going to retell it, okay? But you understand, when the son returned home to the father, he still had to live with at least one consequence that he created from his actions. And the fact was, he had no money. If you read the story, the father split all his money between the two sons, and the one son spent it all. That was still a consequence. Son, I have no more money for you. I'll feed you. I'll clothe you. I'll welcome you as a son. I'll comfort you. But I got no more money for you. I'm sorry. This is a consequence. And so he was still in that consequence stage. He was still facing up to that reality. And that may be what you have to do with your crazy maker. And that will be a benefit, because then they'll turn to you and say, you really are for this relationship. You really do care for me. Yes, I do. And I'm sorry this is being caused by what you've done, but that's what it is. And I'm here for you still. So you follow that. We're going to flesh out more of these principles next week. So I hope you're here. Thank you. Have a good day.